Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hello, it's been a long time. Hello, it's been a long, long time since I called you. It feels like years since I called you.
Okay, will you please introduce yourselves?
I'm Paige Burkham, and I'm with my brother, Jack Torrey, and we are the Cactus Blossoms, and we are in my basement in Minneapolis. And we attempt to sing and write songs together and make records.
I was with you. Has it been that long? This can't go on every day.
Well, hey again, everybody. You're listening to The Show on the Road. I'm your musical magical carpet driver, Zach Lupitan. And this week, as you just heard, we'll be talking to two singing brothers from Minneapolis who make up the wonderful duo, the Cactus Blossoms. You know, I wondered to myself if this was the right episode to put out this week, after some terrible events have happened in the United States, including the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the Supreme Court. After all, since you like to get on your soapbox, Zach, wouldn't you like to have a political songwriter on here like Ani DeFranco, who you had before? Or maybe someone who could primal scream loud enough to change Red State America's mind before it's too late? For me personally, this hits especially close to home, as my wife has developed a rare syndrome that if she got pregnant again, she could die. This is not a joke, folks. 75,000 more unwanted pregnancies will be forced to go forward in this country if we don't do something now. Can music confront any of this? I don't know. But what my doom-scrolling fingers and my tormented mind needs right now is actually soft music. What the brothers and the Cactus Blossoms have been creating up in Minnesota is something delicate and needed. There's something deep inside their songs. Anyway, I'm glad you're here, and if you like my band Dust Bowl Revival, we'll be heading to the Midwest, July 6th, City Winery, Chicago, and in the Cactus Blossoms' backyard at Dakota, July 8th. We'll see you there, and here they are now, the Cactus Blossoms. Obviously, people know your brothers after putting out three records, but with different last names, one being a stage name. If the other brother who doesn't have the stage name would want to create a stage name right now, but in a very fantastical, like, it could be the most outlandish stage name ever, what would it be?
Let's see.
You can hear my dog growling at that question next to me.
I thought that might have been my belly. That's good.
He's very offended by that question.
Yeah. Man, I've never thought of being anything but myself. I guess I'd have to go with, maybe instead of Paige, I could just go by Rage, you know, something like that. Rage.
That could be your wrestler name.
Right, exactly. I was trying to think of a wrestler name. Yeah. First name change.
It's interesting listening to this new record, One Day, which is awesome. Congratulations. I hear, maybe accidentally or not, a lot of influences of another Minnesota band that I love, the Jayhawks.
We love them too.
You guys probably aren't friends with them, but, or maybe you are. Maybe it's a small town in Minneapolis.
It's kind of a small town. We have a lot of mutual friends.
We've met them. We've got to play a show with them a few years back.
There's this interesting combination of, obviously, harmony first, combination of roots music you know, obviously everyone's talked about the Everly Brothers comparison, but let's go beyond that. There's the element of sweetness and menace in your songs, which I love, because we're drawn in by that silky sibling harmony, but there's a lot of dark storm rumblings happening underneath. And you kind of mentioned that this record, which was created during the pandemic, has a lot of these silver linings that are sort of threaded throughout our lives. I hear it as kind of like a slow motion breakup album. Am I wrong?
I mean, you're not right or wrong, I guess. I don't know, man. Isn't it a lot like life? There's a lot of joy and a lot of menacing stuff out there. I think it's all kind of accidental. He's probably the sweetness. I'm probably a little bit more of the menacing side, but I don't know what to do about it.
But I'm rage.
Right. Yeah. He has anger issues, but I have a dark swirling sea beneath me.
That title track, One Day, reminds me of this ominous Beatles song off Rubber Soul, Run for Your Life. You know that song?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Huh. Fast as You Can. Huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like...
You mean like it's a little threatening or something?
Yeah, there's like a little hint of like, look, this is all going to end someday. You're going to really regret it. It's not ending right now.
But good.
When it does, things are going to get real bad for you. And then you're going to wish that I was still around. Just like run for your life if you can, little girl. Because it's going to be like real bad when things go down. But it's not going down yet. But when it does.
One day. One day. Yeah, I mean, that's a funny little song, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know. I think it's fun to switch it around, switch the perspectives around. It's pretty vague, but I think a lot of us could relate to that kind of sentiment. Yeah, it's a mixed bag. There's a lot of love in there, and there's a lot of problems.
It's a good thing you won't see me again. I will.
You guys always been close, or did you fight a lot as teenagers?
That was a long time ago now.
You mean physically fight? No.
We stopped physically fighting about 2 years ago when the pandemic hit. No, we've always been close.
When we were growing up, there were times where we were, you know, sharing a bedroom or things like that, you know, bunk bed kind of situation or things like that. So it's like we were kind of just really, you know, in tight spaces together from the beginning. And we both got interested in graphic design and did
cool.
So we'd both get a computer and start working and stuff. So it's like, in a funny way, we were teaming up whenever possible a long time ago. And it's, I'm not even sure why, but I guess we just agreed on things enough that we would both get excited about the same stuff.
Paige is 5 years older than me, and the poor guy had to put up with sharing a room with me because our house wasn't very big. So, yeah, he had to share a room with me when I was 9 years old. So he's been through a lot, you know.
What did your folks do when you were growing up?
Our mom did daycare, and our dad did kind of Bible study leadership stuff. At the University of Minnesota.
Did he try to steer you towards the faith, or did you rebel against it?
Well, we were just in it as kids, you know, as we all kids are in whatever group they're brought into, you know?
Right.
So just kind of how it was, but they were very sweet, low pressure people. So I think we came out all right.
You guys start playing music when? How young?
I started playing bass when I was a kid, like probably 9, just a little bit. I got a little tiny bass for Christmas one year and just learned how to play by ear on that. And Paige got into drums.
I had a drum set, but really we were both just kind of messing around back then. We weren't too, you know, we loved music, but we weren't pursuing, you know, we weren't getting lessons or thinking really seriously about it. It was just kind of fun to jam out. It wasn't until quite a bit later, like I said, after we had other ideas of what we might do, even maybe graphic design or things like that, other interests. And then somehow we both got sucked into a vortex of folk music and kind of discovering all this great stuff that we knew nothing about growing up. You know, people like everything from Lead Belly to Hank Williams to just all the big stuff that, you know, maybe some people grow up with if they have folky parents. But yeah, that kind of blew our minds.
We started raiding the Minneapolis Public Library CD collection and doing a lot of discovery that way. And then, you know, getting into like radio stations on WFMU out in New Jersey, and because kind of archived radio is just starting in the early 2000s. I mean, Bob Dylan's Theme Time Radio Hour was pretty cool.
Mm.
Pretty cool, weird mix. Getting shown stuff and meeting people and having them turn you on to stuff. So it was kind of slow, organic thing.
Yeah, that was the interesting part about it, is with some of the musical interests we had, I don't even know how, like who turned us on to it first, but then I think we were both really, I don't know, just strangely passionate about it. Like it just, it was amazing. And then we started meeting people kind of randomly, almost, it felt like, who were super into the stuff we were into, but they would know about other people. Like that, you know, we'd meet someone who's into Graham Parsons or somebody who's into really old folk music or blues. And yeah, we kind of fell into this local scene in Minneapolis and found out there were a lot of people into the stuff we were now into. And this was probably 15 years ago or something, or maybe more now.
Yeah, more.
But yeah, so that was pretty exciting, actually. And, you know, even finding out about other local musicians, old guys who'd been doing it since the 60s who are still playing here. That was a cool thing, too.
I found Bo Diddley's first LP at a thrift store and put it on, and I'd never listened to Bo Diddley before, and it blew my mind, you know?
Mm.
It was like discoveries like that, where it was like, I don't know, it costs $2.80. I don't know if I can like spend money to explore music I don't know anything about, and, you know, brought it home. I still have that to this day and love it. So yeah, thrift stores, libraries, radios, friends, that's kind of how it all came to be.
Look, you have no idea why Bo Diddley is going to hit you in a certain way, right? When did you guys realize that your voices could blend together and create something magical? Was there like an actual song where you're like, oh, let's try this one day, and it sort of just leapt out of you?
I mean, we kind of got pressured into it by friends and people we knew. I mean, in a sweet, sweet way, pressured into it. Like, hey, will you guys sing a song together? You know, while we're hanging out around a campfire, or
friendly Minnesota bullying.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be really great if you could sing a song for us.
Yeah.
So that's how we started, and, you know, grew it from 2 songs we kind of knew to 5 songs we kind of knew, and people seemed to dig it, and we had fun doing it, so we just kept going.
What was the first song that you learned?
This is kind of funny with, you know, mentioning the Christian upbringing, the Leuven Brothers, who are kind of famously, hilariously Christian in their album covers and everything. The Satan is
right.
Real.
Yeah.
But you know, they were an example of a band that I never heard. You know, like, we did hear the Everly Brothers as kids and stuff like that, but hadn't heard the Leuvens before. And some of their songs were, I think, some of the first ones.
Like Running Wild was one of theirs that we did.
You're on.
Like a fun, crazy, freak show country harmony thing. it was great.
Yeah, I mean, so we didn't sing together as kids, but like my grandparents were in a quartet, and all my family members could, like, all my uncles and aunts could all sing, and I was kind of, we were used to having a kind of musical family. So right. I didn't realize that being able to sing a song in harmony together was going to impress anybody when we started doing that. And some of our friends were like, wow, you guys can sing harmony together. So.
I mean, it's funny that somehow David Lynch found your music, right? As part of this new Twin Peaks thing, because again, he traffics in this nostalgia mixed with menace.
Yeah.
I say that as a former film major who did a lot of essays on David Lynch. But he, you know, uses, you know, a song like Blue Velvet, right, as the sort of touchstone of that searing unrest underneath the 50s glow of America, right? You have a song like Powder Blue off your first record, You're Dreaming. Just effortlessly beautiful harmonies. Love the divineness of finding your person, right?
One more kiss, eye to eye.
When you're singing a deeply earnest love song like that, like, how do you, like, when you recorded that song, was there a feeling like this could go somewhere dark, or do we want to, like, just have it be a genuine, I'm opening my heart to this person song?
I mean, if I remember right, we had kind of demoed that before we went to the studio, and it just had this kind of sweet, airy, lonely love song vibe that was just really natural and easy for us to do. We don't really think about that stuff too much.
I think mysteriousness is maybe another way to put it with some things, right? Like, you know, like things that are supposed to be kind of you know, love is supposed to be mysterious, and maybe that's even a little unsettling. Or,
well, I think I, what you guys have in that song, sort of like some of the David Lynch stuff, is that desperation in that love. You know, you're all I want all the time, right?
Yeah,
it's like
a little over the top,
right? It's like that that type of love song, when you look at it a different way, almost seems dangerous or like obsessive.
Yeah
Or it's just really earnest, you know.
I think it's supposed to be a bit of a fantasy, maybe,
right?
Is, you know,
right?
Which, not real.
Yeah. Like more of a dream is what I mean, you know?
Only you. On my mind.
The song Mississippi off that I'm Dreaming record, I think, has that low, was it baritone guitar, when you have the sort of really deep guitar solo, which again is used in the Twin Peaks universe a lot, spaghetti western surf guitar, which is interesting because obviously in Minnesota, just like in Italy, where they're creating these spaghetti Western sounds, they're a long way away from any surf culture. You know, it's all like part of this American mystique, almost like the soundtrack of the American dream that is both there and not there. There's a line in that song, "You look different from way down there," which kind of hit me.
Mississippi.
Right.
Which runs right through the Twin Cities all right. the way down to the Gulf. But yeah, that's that line is "you look different from way down here" is about having jumped in the river.
And what are you doing underwater?
Not drowning yet.
There's a dive I know on River Street. Go on in and take my seat. There's a lot of friends I'm never meet. Gonna take a dive off River Street.
We were so surprised that anyone wanted us to play shows. So we just thought we were eccentric weirdos into obscure music making that no one would have interest in. It's been pretty fun to have it grow into something a lot bigger than that. Of you on the surface.
I think the beautiful thing about folk music, especially harmony-driven folk music, is that it doesn't really matter what you look like, where you're from, you know, how much money is behind you to start. If you get in a room and those harmonies work, everybody is transfixed. It's like a universal lightning bolt to the head. You know, there's something about it that it's, maybe it's a primal thing where, you know, our animal brains are just deeply moved by it.
We tilt our heads and listen.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, it feels like a religious experience, I think, when people are harmonizing together. And there's something obviously about sibling harmony that is even more deep. When you guys are arranging a song, do you always have the same kind of harmony layering, or do you kind of have to decide who's going to sing the higher part or how it comes together?
You know, song by song basis, yeah. We'll you know, slowly figure out, like, what can we do on this? What can we do with this idea that we came up with? Now, where do we take it? You know, it's the fun part of writing songs is that you don't have a map and you've never heard anyone else do it. So it's completely up to us. Yeah.
When Jack, or when we started, Jack was writing most of the songs and he still writes more than me. But and I was kind of natural with harmonies. So I would just sing along with him. So that was kind of how things started, was me always singing the harmony. But now we've been kind of writing more and sometimes mixing it up in different ways.
One of my songwriting heroes, Jenny Lewis, you guys have had a musical connection to her for a long time. And she's sort of the third wheel on that Everybody song in the best way possible.
Isn't
you know?
That crazy? I'm the third wheel on that one, I'll say. Yeah.
But it has this sort of, yeah, this yearning kind of salty vibe that I always love about her vocal delivery, you know?
Yeah, she's so cool.
You guys first come in contact with her?
I think when we were in New York after we were touring in 2016 for You're Dreaming, somebody had brought her out to a show and we met and kind of kept in touch because of some Minneapolis connections, and time flies.
Yeah, and then a couple years later, I guess we were touring with her.
Yeah, she had
a little bit
play some shows. It's always a pleasure. I need to get a Jenny Lewis show on the books here to go to. It's been a long time. We've seen ourselves at last in bits of broken glass. We really have come so far to even get to where we are.
When she did the was it the 10th anniversary of Rabbit Fur Coat, she did that tour with the Watson twins. She did it at a church here in LA, and I was like probably the closest I've ever been to like crying profusely throughout a show. Just that album, I think, just, I don't know, it hit me in a certain place in my life. I think it's one of the greatest albums ever made personally, but I think she should do a new album with you guys as the harmonies. I love the Watson twins, but
I was going to say, I love the Watson twins.
And we met them too. And we went out on some of those shows. Yeah.
That would be pretty,
we had an instant like sibling bond. You know, we had like never met them before, and instantly it's like the four of us are in a little circle hanging out, and they're so great.
Rolling Stone calls that everybody's song classic soft rock.
Yes. All right. We've been aiming for that for years.
You'll fit right in on was the station my mom listened to in the car in Chicago, The Light 95.5.
Right, right. Yeah, we had a light too.
Light rock.
Light FM.
And now I think like when you were a kid, a lot of that music, you're like, oh God, it's like so cheesy. And now you're like, yeah, a lot of these songs are rad. It's like James Taylor and, you know. Like
Jerry Rafferty is kind of right. This is awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. It gets that music, I guess, is kind of dangerous. You can get made fun of for it, but well, I don't know. It's definitely not the only corny music out there.
I mean, when I was a teenager, I was listening to like Lauryn Hill, MTV Unplugged, Steely Dan, Radiohead, Air, and then Johnny Cash live from Folsom Prison, and just this Todd Rundgren,
right?
Greatest hits. Loved that CD. You know, just a huge mixed bag. And it's fun to be making new music and have some of those influences come out. Hello, it's me. I've thought about us for a long, long time. Maybe I think too much, but something's wrong. There's something here that doesn't last too long. Maybe it's like soft rock is like the norm core of music, you know?
Quite
palatable.
Like it's comfortable. It like feels like really good in like a really scary time, like right now.
Yeah, we love ELO too.
Yeah,
but you know, we're all limited by our own skills too. You know, like I guess if you could sing like James Brown, you'd probably make music like James Brown. But you know,
I mean, really, that was the catalyst for like, how did you get into all this different music? It's like the Traveling Wilburys. And then just follow each of those threads in every direction they lead, and you'll find a lot of great music.
I wish there would be more supergroups like that, you know, and some people are kind of doing it like Phoebe Bridgers and Conrad Wilburst and some of these people, but like, or like the Silk Sonic thing, right?
Yeah.
That's happening right now, which is incredible. Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars, like where you have legendary, like top of their game pop rock and roll artist just be like, no, now we're all in the same band
having fun.
I'm kind of surprised it doesn't happen a little more.
If you guys could create your own super group from history, who would be in it?
From history,
like anyone in history, like let's say five guys. It doesn't have to be guys. Five musicians. Like Janis Joplin teams up with
they should work
Tom
together,
Petty,
right?
And Steven Tyler.
I was like, does it have I mean, is it just a hypothetical music thing, or should I think about it like psychological group dynamics of this fictional supergroup?
I'm thinking musically, you know, the psychological stuff will work its way out.
Right, right. That's complicated. Well, I mean, it'd be pretty cool if Astrud Gilberto was in it.
Okay.
Sly Stone. Who else? We got two.
This Beethoven. Go on.
I love that. Yeah, from all time.
Yeah. Yeah. How big is this supergroup?
I'd like to get Grog.
Hey, five.
Grog was great at hitting those stones together.
Well, we'll need a producer type in there to kind of wrangle everybody.
Quincy Jones can put it together, probably. Yeah.
I mean, George Harrison would be cool.
Yeah, they'd be like, well, but yeah, he was in the Wilburys already, though. So.
Oh, well, can't we just take from the Wilburys?
Yeah.
You sure can.
We could just go back to the Wilburys.
We'll take Roy and Jeff. No, that's too hard.
Well, that opening track, Hey Baby, you know, some people compared it to like a lost Traveling Wilburys track. But there's this line, you know, that hook that you have that I think, again, plays into this idea of the ominous part of the silver lining. I hope it all works out. Oh, it always works out. Like you're almost trying to convince yourself that everything's going to be okay at the end of the line. But you don't know, because you're hoping that it's going to work out. Maybe. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's supposed to be funny. I mean, it's not a very serious song. It's
a little optimistic.
Yeah. I saw someone on YouTube or something said, like, I hate to tell you, but it doesn't always work out in a comment. And I thought,
it's got it.
It's one line. I hope it works out. It always works out.
You should tell the truth more in your songs.
I know.
But I think there's a courage to having a blatantly optimistic hook, you know, like, no, you know what? It's all going to work out. I mean, I hope it does.
Yeah. It's totally my personality. Hyper positive thinking. Hey, baby, I hope it all works out.
It always works out. Yeah, Is It Over feels like we're dropped into that 70s.
That's soft rock again.
Rock. But like the unison, I love a lot, because, you know, in that Flying Burrito Brothers, Crosby, Stills, Nash thing, where we know the harmony is going to come, but not right away, right?
Right, if, right.
Like, because when it blossoms out of that, and you have the organ and the pedal steel going, and you have these lines again, that the harmonies sound really sweet. But you're saying, hey, we're all, you know, all washed up. You're bound to fall. Just waiting for that curtain call. Yeah, it feels like you're talking about like an old sort of weary
soft rocker
on the casino circuit, being like, maybe they'll stop coming to the Harrah's Casino ballroom one of these
days. It's a little about the perils of old age. And I'm over 40 now, so now I can sing about that. Just waiting for the curtain call. Me the hook, but not too fast. I always say the best for last. Is it over? Do you remember the song? I knew I'd lose you all along, right?
The way technology's gone, though, I could live another 100 years. Yeah, maybe.
It's true. Well, you could break a leg, a brittle bone. Now you're petrified like a rolling stone. All washed up, you're bound to fall. Just waiting for the curtain call.
When you first started playing, quote unquote, professionally, right, where there was actually some skin in the game and you had to take this seriously as your job, was there a specific show where you started to question your decision to devote yourself to this life where it went so off the rails that you were like, maybe we should have maybe had our own graphic design firm instead?
That would have gone worse.
There were a lot of things where we were kind of pushed into the deep end of the pool right away.
Yeah.
Where, like, another person we had the chance to open for was Casey Musgraves quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she's been kind of blown up since we gave her the Cactus Blossoms bump back in 2000, whatever that was.
2016.
Somewhere around there.
But you were part of, you were one of her space cowboys.
Well, we had the chance to open for her a little bit too. And it was just sometimes like those great opportunities you're really grateful for are also really scary. Mm-hmm. You know, like people with their tight band and their production, and they're playing this big theater that you've never played before. And it's like, we're going to do this. Like, what have we done? Why are we here? This is, you know, I guess it's imposter syndrome, but it's also just like, I think that's how it is when you're starting out.
Well, they asked us, so right. I hope they're happy with what they get. But, you know, getting pushed into the deep end of the pool is how you learn how to swim. And all of those experiences were so cool. And, you know, we just always have taken the approach of, we'll do the best we can. And thank you so much for getting us involved. It's amazing.
There was a casino small arena that we played that was kind of odd, an odd show for her too, I think, at the time. But that was kind of just surreal. Like, what are we doing here? Like, you're loading in your old van into some place that has never seen an old van like that. Like, right. Never, it's only big shiny buses pulling in. You're like, yep, we're part of the show. But it was, I mean, that was super fun though, too. Like, it's fun to feel like you're kind of getting away with something if you're, you know, on a stage like that, where you're like, how did we get here? This is awesome.
Well, I think there's a bittersweet thing sometimes when you get a glimpse of the big leagues, as it were, you know, because when the new album Shine starts to wear off, and then you got to go back to the drawing board, and then there's these years where, nope, it's just you and a small venue in Kansas City or something, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, wait, but we were up there with the shiny people, you know.
You know we're starting a tour in Kansas City in a couple days, right?
Yeah.
Knuckleheads.
Yeah, but, yeah. Yeah. You're right. But, you know, yeah,
Train of Horn is gonna be awesome.
It's not in a straight line for sure. And that's totally okay. You know, but yeah, it's not like we're not catapulting to stardom the whole time or something, that's for sure.
We've opened some shows with Lake Street Dive through the years, and this was probably five some years ago where we got to open at the Wiltern here in LA, which is a old movie palace, you know, 3,000, you know, maybe more capacity.
Yeah,
you know, it's like pop stars play there basically. We're like, okay, we're gonna do it. You know, I was still wearing like a straw hat then for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
And we got out there as they were sound checking. And I was like, oh, they must be playing like a recording of their vocal tracks just to like get the speakers working out. It just sounded so pristine. And then I looked out there and they're just like kind of in their pajamas warming up like around the drum riser in like perfect 4-part harmony.
Yeah.
And that was like, it was like the AAA team getting like brought into Yankee Stadium with a right. full house. And you're like, oh shit. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that fun?
It's informative though, isn't it? You know, when you're opening for someone like that and you're like, I see why you're where you are.
Oh yeah.
You're amazing.
And we, for some reason, had this party trick where at the end of our finale, I would throw this like Bert from Mary Poppins straw hat as high as I could in the air. And then our lady singer, Liz, would catch it as the last note sounded. It was successful maybe 30, 40% of the time, you know. Sometimes it would just fly into the audience. But on that night,
I got to buy another straw hat. Yep.
On that night, it was like a perfect arc in perfect catch, right? And like someone like caught like a picture of it, and her face of her catching it is just like classic. She's like,
"That's amazing."
Or she's like, "Oh my god, it actually worked. This really bad idea party trick."
Flowers are all that I dream of. You don't know what you've got, so you want what you can't have.
What do you think has been your biggest rock and roll stardom moment? I know you're not necessarily, you know, playing with a huge rock and roll band sound, but I'm sure there's some places.
What do you mean?
There's some places probably, you know, when you play First Avenue or something, where is there a place where you really feel like we're doing something, there's something big happening here?
No, but I get what you're asking. I think probably the only time that happened where we were just kind of mind blown, like what's going on, was when we played in Spain for the first time. And
really,
I think it was Madrid.
Yeah.
And it may have been sold out and people were singing along.
Nice.
We just were like melting on stage because it was like,
how do you know our song?
I mean, it was just surreal and beautiful and everyone was so nice and the vibe was so good. That was probably the closest to like a rock star feeling.
People singing a waltz with us.
Yeah, sweetest way.
Did you go into Adios Maria as your
That was one that people sing
encore?
Along with a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Adios Maria, I'll meet you in paradise. Run my hands through your hair at the break of sunrise. Adios Maria, I'll meet you in paradise. If the good Lord is willing and the creek don't rise.
Where did that song come from?
That's one I scribbled down on like 5 post-it notes in the middle of the night, long time ago now. Just kind of came out in one foul swoop.
I mean, I feel like initially I thought it was like almost like a Hank Williams cover or something, like where, you know, like these old country songs that we're going to
go south of the border. I stole a Hank line in there
for this song. But it feels, again, so genuine and feels so, you know, timeless, like it could have been airlifted from a Studio A Nashville recording in the 50s. You know, when you guys are recording, is there a conscious effort to try to find a sound, like in the reverb specifically, that you guys have with your voices? Like, do you have like a signature plate that you guys like, or is it changing record to record?
It's changing. And I think, you know, like with this newest record, we were recording it actually right where we are sitting right now. Pretty dry room. Are you getting a lot of wall sound?
Only the best wall sound.
Okay, good. Yeah, but, you know, we just thought, hey, it'd be fun to not use as much reverb on every song on this record. And I mean, it's case by case. What were you going to say, Paige?
Oh, I was going to say, like, we've worked with the same engineer for the last 3 records. So there has been some of the same plate on.
Yeah, that matters.
But, yeah, I mean, there has been, you know, there are some instruments and probably, it's not like we use all the same microphones and all the same stuff all the time, but yeah, there's probably some continuity because of that.
And Alex Hall is a wizard of sound, so.
Broken love, broken key, broken everything but me, and the door is open wide.
The more I think about these songs, the more I see the accidental comparison with Rubber Soul, the Beatles record.
It's a great album.
It's my one of my favorite albums of all time, but I think there's this push and pull of saltiness, like, again, like a breakup that's about to happen or is happening in the moment that you are just realizing that you're being broken up with or that you're about to break up with someone else, but also this feeling of like, you know, things are going to be better, you know, or like, I'm going to be a different person and I'm going to like leave this shit behind, but not yet because I'm still feeling it in the moment, you know, the I Could Almost Cry song again, almost.
Yeah, there's a lot of transition in there, isn't there?
I'm almost really upset that this is happening, but I'm actually kind of into it in a weird way. You know, it's like,
well, I'm so used to it. I can't cry. You know, it's like that one was, I don't know, it's kind of like putting a lot of societal frustration into a, you know, sort of a more poetic, loose metaphoric images, whatever. But there's a part of that song where it's like, man, we've gone through so many years, like 2015 through last year have been gnarly politically, societally, like everything is pretty horrible. It's been pretty like tough on all of our psyches, I think.
Right.
I mean, even if you liked what's going on, I don't know how anyone could like the amount of like horrible dissonance that's happening all around us all the time. It's like that one is kind of just putting that energy into that song, that frustration.
That song Boomerang off Easy Way, some reason I started listening to that over and over again. There's this shuffle between the minor chords that is just like very, again, kind of has an existential questioning vibe, you know.
We don't even know what key that's in.
That pre-chorus, if this is just a dream, then I can't get hurt. Jump across the fire, then I can't get burned. Give me back my life. What is it anyway? Staring at the stars is my getaway.
Is that the Milky Way?
Is that the Milky Way?
That's the last one. Yeah.
What were you feeling when you wrote that song?
I don't know. That one's mysterious to me. I like it. It reminded me of Bowie.
You'll come back again with another name. Do you guys believe in life after death or reincarnation?
Do you remember what it was like before you were born?
Absolutely not.
I think it's going to kind of be like that.
I might come back as somebody who believes in reincarnation.
Oh, there you go.
But right now I don't.
Then I can get hurt. Jump across the fire. Then I can get burned. Give me back my life. What is it anyway? Staring at the stars is my getaway. Is that the Milky Way?
Do you?
You know, I go back and forth on it. I mean, you read these accounts of these kids in India and different people who are like, know all this stuff that's impossible to know. And I mean, it's pretty amazing. When my daughter was born, it was right, I think, a few days after Betty White had just died. And my wife was
in a,
like...
It ripped a hole in the...
My wife was like, wouldn't it be great if our tiny child was like a very happy baby Betty White? And she is the most cheerful, like smiley, goofy little girl. You know, we're like, I don't know, maybe it's Betty.
Wow. Yeah, you could have named her Betty. Yeah.
They did. My grandma's,
they named her grandma's Betty White.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I don't know. I'll just have to find out.
I just work here. That's above my pay grade. You're a boomerang. You'll come back again
with another name. Nothing is the same.
Which song would you like to attempt to play over the airwaves from the new record?
We didn't actually talk about it. Should we try Hey Baby?
Is that okay if we do Hey Baby?
Absolutely.
Do one of the newer ones, you know?
With the Ghosts of the Wilburys by your side.
Can you hear us okay? Can you tell if the sound is all right?
Have you ever covered like a heavy metal group or like something
have
that
you?
Was is totally out of left field? I don't know. I'm trying to think.
I don't think
like, it makes me think of like the Cardigans covering Black Sabbath,
Iron Man.
Yeah, like
right.
I suppose it could be done, you know.
Oh, it can for sure yeah. be done.
That's what was so magical, I think, about that Billy Joe from Green Day and Norah Jones doing that Foreverly.
Oh yeah.
Record. You're like,
I never would have saw that coming. Yeah.
The dude from Green Day is singing like effortlessly in like folk harmony style. This is amazing. Come on.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
So when you guys cover Metallica, like no one's going to see it coming. It's going to be great.
Have you seen that documentary?
When we cover Green Day.
Have you seen that Metallica documentary?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you got to watch it. You got
to. Is it on Netflix?
I don't know where
it
is.
It's an old
now.
Documentary, right?
Yeah, it's from like 15.
Oh, okay.
It's been around.
Yeah, but I just finally saw it and people had told me to watch it forever and it was really worth it. And I recommend everyone out there should watch it. It's no spoilers. I'm not going to tell you anything. It's just amazing.
I think you guys could do a Metallica song. It'd be, you know, wow. No one would expect it. It'd be great.
Cool. Well,
on that note,
watch out for our next album.
Here are the Cactus Blossoms playing Hey Baby.
Right.
Hey baby, do you want to take a trip with me? I've got a feeling there might be a silver lining all around. Hey maybe, we could drive all night through, see what this old truck can do. I've only driven it in time. Hey baby, I hope it all works out. It always works out. Hey baby, do you want to go to Mexico or take 10 west to the coast and one up to the bay? You know what's crazy? I've never seen a mountain range in 100 miles. A lot can change if clouds aren't in the way. Hey baby, I hope it all works out. It always works out. So many things I thought I'd never see, like you sit shotgun staring back at me. Thank you. days are shaded, way up here in the trees. No place I'd rather be, nothing's gonna bring me down. Hey, baby, I hope it all works out. It always works out. Hey, baby, I hope it all works out. It always works out.
It's gonna work out this time. There it is. Well, thanks for getting on the line with me, guys. I love the new records. Awesome.
Yeah, nice. Great talking to you, man.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Cactus Blossoms, everybody. You can go to thecactusblossoms.com for their newest record, One Day, and their upcoming tour dates, including a couple shows in Chicago, July 8th at Fitzgerald's and July 9th at the Square Roots Fest. We're just missing each other, sadly. My band, Dust Bowl Revival, will be playing July 6th at City Winery, and then the next day up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, at the 11 Amphitheater, and July 8th at their hometown, Minneapolis, at Dakota. Please check that out, dustbowlrevival.com. And at the end of July, early August, we're going to England. Yes, we're playing in London, Cambridge, Bristol, Shoreham-by-the-Sea, Yorkshire. So many beautiful places. And I will stop doing an English accent right now. If you go to our mothership, thebluegrasssituation.com, you'll see a beautiful video for everybody, which the Cactus Blossoms did with Jenny Lewis. Please check it out. It was posted in March of this year. And I almost forgot to tell you, my group Dust Bowl Revival will be putting out new music this summer. Yes, our first new music in a long while, including the song Lying to Myself, which drops July 15th on Anti-Fragile Records. There's going to be a lot of cool new music coming up. Please check out the teaser, dustbowlrevival.com. As always, The Show on the Road is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Zach Lupitin, and we are part of the BGS Podcast Network. Stay safe. Help a lady in your life who's going through it right now. We all need to do that. Stay strong. Go see some live music, and we'll see you on the trail.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.